On Sportslit 101, we're pleased to be joined by the author of the terrific book, When the Crowd Didn't Roar, How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope. Kevin Cowherd joins us. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it, Rich. Thanks for having me.
It really is a terrific book, and you know, it's recent history, so you feel like you know what happened, and then you read the book and find out my level of knowledge only scratched the surface. What drew you to this story?
Well, quite a few things, but I mean, the main thing is you have to go back to that time and remember what a chaotic time it was here in Baltimore, Rich. You know, first, on April 19th, you had the grievous death of a 25-year-old African-American named Freddie Gray from injuries he suffered in police custody. And that came on the heels of a number of other well-publicized deaths of black men around the country, you know, after questionable encounters with law enforcement. So, you know, you had the deaths of Eric Garner in Staten Island, Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and Tamir Rice in Cleveland, Walter Scott, North Charleston, South Carolina. So no one was surprised when Freddie Gray's death ignited massive protests here in Baltimore. And they were pretty peaceful for the most part till the night of April 25th. And that was the night when demonstrators and bar patrons clashed outside Camden Yards. The Orioles were getting ready to play the Boston Red Sox, and a number of police cars were vandalized, stores were vandalized. But it was 2 days later, you know, after Freddie Gray's funeral, that all hell broke loose. And that's when we had the worst rioting in the city since 1968, the death of the Reverend Martin Luther King. And, you know, why did I write the book? Less than 36 hours later, you know, with the city still feeling like it could erupt all over again, with National Guard troops patrolling the streets, you know, with the sickly smell of charred buildings and burned out cars in the air, with glass from, you know, shattered storefronts still glittering in the streets, with tanks rumbling through West Baltimore. We actually had tanks down here. The Orioles and the Chicago White Sox played a baseball game in lockdown Camden Yards, and, you know, would be the only game in the then 146-year history of the major leagues to be played without fans. So, you know, that's why I wanted to write the book. I was shocked that I was the only one writing about it, to be honest with you, because, you know, the fact is, this might have been the most incongruous setting for an athletic event in the history of modern sports. At least it was to my mind.
Yeah, Kevin, this is Bruce. One of the things about the book that I thought found so compelling is the way you describe how surreal the atmosphere was. Now, I haven't been to Camden Yards. I used to go to games at the old stadium in Baltimore when I was in college, yeah. And it was in a neighborhood, and it seemed like a real working class team, and that. So you get this. Now they're part of urban Baltimore. They're really part of Baltimore. And then the one thing that very often we think, like the Yankees after 9/11, the Red Sox after the bombings in Boston, you think this is what's going to pull everybody back together. But it's so volatile, we decide, no, nobody can come. And you outline how that was difficult for certain people. In the end, did they make the right decision?
I think they did. You know, one of the things, Bruce, that I point out in the book, the city was still very tense. And yeah, a lot of people objected to the fact that they were going to have a ball game downtown with behind locked gates, no fans. But the city was still super tense. And Koise Mfume, former NAACP president and also the a former Maryland congressman, told me, well, how could you square the image of a ballpark filled with cheering fans, when just a couple of miles away, buildings were still smoldering, tanks were rumbling through West Baltimore, National Guards people are all over the place. And the fact is, you couldn't square that image. So, yes, I think ultimately the Orioles made the right decision. And by the way, guys, they did it with, you know, the cooperation of Major League Baseball, the input, I should say, from Major League Baseball, from the police department here, from the mayor's office. It wasn't just the Orioles making this decision, but I think ultimately they made the right decision because it was just so tense. I wasn't at the game. This is all reporting that I did for the book, but I was in Baltimore at that time, and it was a very, very tense and almost like there was an ugliness in the air. It was just like at any moment you wondered what else was going to happen.
Well, the connection from the game to the fans largely came from our friend, the Maine native Gary Thorne, and his broadcast with the great Jim Pomeran. And you talk about it in the book. You'd be hard-pressed to find two better people to be placed in that situation.
You know, that's absolutely right. And I tell you what Gary and Jim did so well that day. They were determined that day, guys, to not gloss over what was happening in the city. You know, they were determined to call a ball game. They were determined to make it an interesting and entertaining call, as they try to do every time. But they were determined also to show, to describe to fans what was happening on the outside of the city. Both of them had been in the city for a while. Jim Palmer, of course, his roots in the city date back to the 70s, the late 60s, actually. And so I thought their broadcast was absolutely terrific. They didn't dwell. It wasn't nine innings of, hey, here's what's happening in Baltimore, and isn't this terrible? But they made sure to let the fans know, this is not another baseball game. We're not just killing time here. This isn't some chatty April game where, you know, we're gonna give you the ball game and then, you know, we're gonna go out to dinner. This was a whole different level of broadcasting, and quite frankly, I thought both of them rose to the occasion wonderfully.
I asked Gary yesterday if in any way he changed his broadcast, and he said no. And what really struck me about that was the way the players went out and they pretended to sign autographs. They did some of the things they would have done if the ballpark was full, outside of a few jokes about taking the crowd out of it early and the like. It was as if to be normal and to be baseball and to be human, they had certain things they had to do. And I found the way you researched that to be absolutely fabulous.
Well, you know, one of the things that I tried to point out in the book, guys, is that this game was not fun for these players, okay? It wasn't. And some of the things that you just talked about and you just described, those were almost like coping mechanisms for these guys. Because, you know, a couple of them, Adam Eaton of the White Sox and even Buck Showalter, the manager, then manager of the Orioles, had said, well, you know, maybe this is going to be like a, you know, they expressed this kind of like vague, semi-romantic notion that, you know, maybe a game without fans would be like the old Sandlot games they played as kids, you know, where no one's watching you. You just throw out the bats and balls and the gloves and you play ball and everyone has fun. And then you all go home for dinner. It wasn't anything like that, guys, because with nobody in the stands in this cavernous stadium, you have to imagine the silence was eerie. And it was unnerving. And the players, for nine innings, the players in both dugouts practically whispered to each other because it felt like they were playing ball in a chapel. You know, there was a point, if you ever listen to the broadcast that Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer did, there's a point where Buck Showalter called for a relief pitcher. I think it was in the seventh inning. And the ringing of the bullpen phone 300 feet away sounded like a fire alarm going off. So, and it was also so quiet, guys, that players in the field couldn't get a handle on how hard the ball was hit. Because every time you heard the crack of the bat in that empty stadium, it sounded like a rocket shot that might hit the warehouse wall instead of just being like a ground ball to second base or a clean single to right field. So it was the most bizarre setting that any of these ball players had ever come across.
Gary was telling us yesterday, too, that there were a group of people watching the game outside one of the gates. And I don't know if this was up in that concourse area up around Utah Street, but had a vantage point where they were actually able to see some of the game.
Yeah, this was it was well beyond the left field wall on Conway Street. And, you know, at one point there were like 60 fans out there. They showed up during batting practice. I mean, some of these fans, a loyal group of fans. And then right next to the ballpark on the other side of the left field wall, there's a Hilton Hotel there, guys. And a number of Orioles fans rented rooms in that hotel and took to the balconies. And that was a little better vantage point. And they hung their Oriole banners and they watched the game on TV, but they watched the game whatever they could from their vantage point from the balcony. So it wasn't like the game. I mean, no one was inside the stadium, but fans turned out, and And as I wrote the book, it was almost like this show of defiance to the Orioles and to Major League Baseball. And it's almost like these Orioles fans, these diehard Orioles fans, saying, "Listen, you can lock us out of the stadium, but we are going to support this team. We're going to show the world that we still support this team." And it was, you know, it was a very charming and almost, you know, it was Baltimore at its finest. These fans showing up, locked out behind these green steel gates, but still determined to catch whatever kind of, you know, whatever action of the ball game that they could.
In the last many years, we've had a lot of books that deal with Jackie Robinson, Oscar Charleston, people from the past, more current people. Your book is the first time I've ever heard anybody really let us know who Buck Showalter is. How did you really find out about him, what you knew about his dad and about where he came from and integration and all this kind of, was he real forthcoming, or did you have to dig?
He was extremely forthcoming. Now, guys, I had been I had worked at the Baltimore Sun for 32 years as a sportscaster, and from 2008 to 2013, I did cover the Orioles as a columnist. And so I was familiar with Buck. I think he trusted me, but he was awfully forthcoming. Talking about, you know, where he grew up in this very racially segregated deep South town, the Florida Panhandle. He talked about actually playing in a game that he felt might be similar to this game. It was a basketball game that he played in his senior year in high school against another school that his school had trouble with. There had been fights and brawls and near riots, and so they decided we're just going to play this game behind locked doors in the gymnasium. But he was awfully forthcoming about this whole thing, and he was very much bothered by the fact that Orioles owner Peter Angelos was so upset by this. Buck Showalter had formed a really great relationship with the owner of the Orioles, Peter Angelos, and Peter Angelos was so upset to see that what the rioting was doing to his city. And so, you know, you felt that Buck Showalter was another one of these guys who stressed, look, it's baseball. We're not going to be, you know, we're more worried about the town and what it's going through and its citizens. And this, we're going to play this baseball game because that's what Major League Baseball is telling us to do. That's what we're going to do. But Buck was one of the people who made it clear that there are far more important things happening in the city, and one of them was this desperate need to get people back together again and to stop the rioting.
Well, it really is a powerful read. The book is called When the Crowd Didn't Roar, How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the book with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, guys.
Nice to talk to you, Kevin.
Kevin Cowherd with us on Downtown. 13 to go before the top of the hour. It really is a remarkable story when you think about it. It just is, again, the most unique game in professional sports history in America.
Yeah, and what I love about the book is that great fiction springs from characters, and this is about the people involved in it plus the city, and that's a hard thing to do. And it's as you know, it's just very well written, and you can tell he's a journalist. There's not a lot of extras in there or asides or whatever. It's a very to the point book, but I really recommend it to people. It was really a very, very pleasant read. Yeah.